And just like the rest of the world, I think that we should be viewing drug use as a public health issue, as a social health issue, rather than a criminal issue, because what we've been doing thus far has not been working.
Welcome to the Vitalist Spark podcast. I'm your host, John Ford, and today we're closing out our mini-series of minisodes featuring 2018 innovation grants. Throughout this mini-series, our purpose is to go beyond that single paragraph in the press release and really get a feel for the great work that's underway in our communities. If you missed our earlier episodes in the series, check back for our interviews with Tucson's Flowers and Bullets, the White Mountain Apache Tribe, and the ACLU's Demand to Learn effort. Right now, though, let's get to our final partner. Mini-series episode 4 takes us beyond the headlines and into the lived experience of the opioid crisis. So I've got an amazing person in the room today. Her name is Haley Coles. She is the executive director of Sonoran Prevention Works. Haley, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you.
You are the recipient of a Vitalist Health Foundation Innovation Grant, for which we couldn't be more grateful that you applied. Tell us just a little bit about what that grant is and what you're working on.
The project that we're working on that is being funded by Vitalist is to address the opioid epidemic from a health equity perspective. We are addressing people who actively use and inject opioids, changing the culture around how we view people, looking at the different institutions that make health very difficult for people who use and inject drugs. And we are partnering with Shot in the Dark, which is a current syringe access program, the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office, University of Arizona College of Medicine, and Creosote Partners to change the conversation towards moving addiction policy, drug use policy towards public health and away from criminal justice.
So aside from that, what do you do with all that spare time you have? Let's start with why you applied for the grant in the first place.
Okay. I applied because I am super committed to health equity. I'm super committed to Arizona, and I don't see a whole lot of organizations or funders who share that same commitment. And understanding that, or finding out that Vitalist shared that interest in health equity, it seemed to me like something that I really wanted to be a part of.
Thank you for applying, and thank you for being a recipient. We're really excited to have you.
Yeah, I mean, this has been incredible.
So $125,000 to do what?
So we are addressing the opioid epidemic from the perspective of health equity. And so we are attempting to focus on the population that typically gets left out. Typically, when we talk about the opioid epidemic, we talk about preventing opioid abuse. We talk about treating opioid abuse. And we are concerned with people who are in the middle of opioid abuse, who oftentimes cannot fit the molds that they're supposed to aspire to. And oftentimes they're left in the dark. They're swept under the rug, and under the rug is a bottomless pit of disease, illness, violence, incarceration, and death. So our project seeks to change the culture around how we view these folks, to create a landscape where we can create policies that address these people's actual needs, and to also look at the intersections of these people's lives.
What is the culture or the predominant frame through which people view the population you're trying to help? What are you trying to change it to? Like, what's the before and after of this grant?
I think right now the culture around drug use, the perspective around drug use, and there are different perspectives and some of them overlap, but it's this idea that people who use drugs and who are in a lifestyle that may be difficult for some people to stomach, that it's a choice for them, that they are criminals, that they are doing something illegal, so they should be locked up and they should be treated in the criminal justice system. There's also an idea, you know, I'm cautious to not over-pathologize this population. Some people look at substance use as a brain disease, and it certainly can be, but that also leaves out all of the reasons why people choose to use drugs. And many of those reasons have to do with not having survival needs met. A lot of it has to do with the medical system abandoning people who need medications. Opioids work for pain. They also work to treat mental conditions like bipolar. And so when we see people who are essentially flunked out of the medical system, they start to take care of their health in their own way, which oftentimes can look like buying drugs on the street. So I think that the way that our culture and our society views people who use drugs is not very nuanced at all. I try to call this population people who use drugs as opposed to drug users, because they are people who do a lot of other things, who have a lot of other skills, who have a lot of other relationships. And so that's kind of what we'd like to see, is understand that people who use drugs are not all alike, that everybody has really different experiences, really different needs, that different systems and institutions overlap to make safety and health very difficult for people in different ways. And just like the rest of the world, I think that we should be viewing drug use as a public health issue, as a social health issue, rather than a criminal issue, because what we've been doing thus far has not been working.
This fundamental shift from drug user to people who happen to use drugs is a huge one. Mm-hmm. And it brings to mind a very unusual partner you have in the grant, that being the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office. Can you talk a little bit about that, how it came about, and what you hope to achieve by partnering with them?
Yeah. So several years ago, when we looked at implementing a syringe access program in Maricopa County, we were told that the former sheriff of Maricopa County, Sheriff Arpaio, said that he would personally arrest anybody who operated a syringe access program. So that was more reassurance, A, that our culture and that our society here does not understand the needs of people who use drugs, and also that there was a need for us to take action. And with an administrative shift, the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office is seeing substance use more as a public health issue than as a criminal issue. And we need all the help we can get when we're talking about drug use, because it is so stigmatized and there can be so much conflict around it. And we've had a partner in the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office for some time. We partnered to implement overdose prevention into their jails. So the health staff in the county jail is now distributing naloxone to anybody who wants it upon release. And we know that the county sheriff's office has experienced accidental needle sticks, like so many law enforcement have. So we're going to be partnering to develop a needle stick prevention curriculum for the deputies that also talks about harm reduction. It talks about why deputies may be at risk for a needle stick. It's because the people that they're coming into contact with are too afraid to tell them that they have needles. Why are they so afraid to tell them that they have needles? Well, because it's criminalized, because it's stigmatized. So we're really kind of addressing the immediate needs of deputies as well as the immediate needs of people who use drugs. And we're hoping that that will help to shift the conversation around drug use, IV drug use, and syringe access programs.
May I be the first to say shame on you for having such an enlightened and engaging and comprehensive strategy.
Well, thank you.
You've got a couple of other partners as well. You've got University of Arizona College of Medicine in Tucson and Creosote Partners. Can you talk about their roles as well?
Yeah. University of Arizona College of Medicine, we're working with Dr. Alicia Allen, who is an epidemiologist who's got an interest and experience in substance use and harm reduction. So she's going to be helping us, A, to evaluate our efforts to make sure that we are creating the culture change that we want to see, that our trainings are effective, that our advocacy efforts are effective. We're really excited. We're actually going to be doing media audits. We will be looking at policymaker engagement, developing a spectrum of engagement tool. So based on whether people call us back, whether people respond to us, the way that policymakers have conversations with us. So that'll be really fun. And then Creosote Partners, they are a governmental relations firm. They do lobbying, though they won't be doing lobbying for us, but they do have relationships with policymakers and with different committees. They are known at the legislature, so they'll be helping us to have conversations, to educate policymakers, and also to educate constituents, as well as educating people who inject drugs directly. And so we'll be partnering as well with Shot in the Dark, which is a syringe access program that's currently operating in Maricopa County. So we'll all be kind of creating this reciprocal feedback loop where we'll be surveying people who inject drugs about their health experiences, with their experiences with utilizing the syringe access program, services and programs that they'd like to see. We will be doing advocacy workshops, so engaging with them to find out what kind of advocacy do you want to do? Do you want to be talking to policymakers? Do you want to be writing op-eds? Do you want to be holding a picket sign? Like, what do you want to do and how can we facilitate that? And kind of translating those experiences and those desires across these different population lines.
People who work in policy tend to talk about this work from the perspective of, we've got to respond to the opioid crisis and we've got rising hepatitis C and HIV infection rates. But what we're really talking about with this work is people. Talk a little bit more about what Sonoran Prevention Works focuses on when it comes to the people and how you do it, because it's different than most.
Yeah, you know, I think talking about HIV and hepatitis and overdose is a way for us to continue humanizing people who use drugs. But at the end of the day, it's not about HIV, it's not about hepatitis C, and it's not about overdose. Really, what kills people is stigma. It's not these diseases. These diseases, these deaths are all completely preventable if we would stop withholding resources and education from the people who need it. So, you know, when we engage with people who use drugs, we never, ever bring up drug treatment. We never, ever tell them that there's something wrong with them, that they're deficient, that they should be doing something different with their lives. Everybody else is telling them that, and we're trying to create a safe haven for folks. And oftentimes what happens is that when people are ready to make a change, and that change may be going to treatment, that change may be switching from injecting to snorting, that change may be deciding that they're not going to share needles with their partners anymore. Whatever that change is, they come to us when they're ready to make them, and they know that we'll support them wherever they're at. So we're really kind of moving the bar, trying to understand that any positive change is important, that for people who use drugs, oftentimes the drug use is not the primary problem. Drug use makes life tolerable. When people are living in poverty, when people are living in violent relationships, when people feel outcast, when people are living in a world where, you know, if you have a felony charge, you are basically locked out of society. So we want to make change tangible for people.
One of the things that strikes me about the work that Sonoran Prevention Works does that is remarkably effective, but also truly unique and tremendous, is the capacity for your team to function as friends. In the clinical world, they might be called community health workers, but they are really the connection to people who don't feel like they belong anywhere or connected to anything. Can you dimensionalize how you make that happen and maybe even share a story or two about what that looks like?
Yeah, the majority of our staff and volunteers are all people who formerly or currently use drugs. In a lot of behavioral health settings, we hear them referred to as peers. But oftentimes, to be a peer, you have to be sober for a certain amount of time. You have to have a certain type of sobriety. If you relapse, you're no longer eligible. And I appreciate peers, and there's tons of evidence that what they do works in behavioral health settings. We like to kind of expand that. We also work with a lot of people who, a lot of our volunteers have never used drugs, but they have family members who have used drugs. And we think that that personal connection, whether it's family use, friend use, or personal use, is really vital. We also want to provide opportunities to people who are actively using, people who have felonies, people who, because of their drug use, are treated like pariahs. And so, you know, while I also appreciate very much clinicians, peers, et cetera, there's something to engaging with people who use drugs, empowering them to be leaders, giving them the resources to be powerful in their communities. And oftentimes, I mean, people who use drugs really are experts. And it's a shame that we don't involve them more when we're talking about policies. I mean, I have never, in the many years that I've been doing this work in Arizona, when there's been a round table or a conference or a symposium, there's never, ever, ever anybody there who is an active drug user who's talking about what their immediate needs are. So somebody who used drugs 5 years ago, although that connection is very important, they're not experiencing what it's like to use drugs right now. And we also want to have diverse drug users who are sharing their experiences, who are engaging with other people who are using drugs. Because let's be honest, a middle-class white drug user is going to have a very different experience in the world than a person of color who's a drug user, or a person who's queer who's a drug user. And so all of those intersections also overlap to impact people's health and ability to access help.
Which brings us to equity. How do you as an organization take the thread of equity through everything that you do?
Ooh, that's a tough question.
I don't know anybody who knows the answer completely, but I know that you're practicing it. So
we're trying to. I think that we could always do better, and we're still figuring out ways to do better as a pretty small organization that's growing really fast, trying to set it up from the beginning where we can be equitable to our employees, to our contractors, and to the different communities that we serve. So I think really the principles of harm reduction truly are also the principles of health equity. We meet people where they're at. We listen before we speak. We make sure that everything we do is consensual. So, and that has, I mean, that's when we are orienting new employees. That's when we are doing a workshop on cultural competency around drug use. That's when we're doing direct service with some folks who are really difficult to engage with. I mean, we see people who are pregnant who are using injectable drugs on a pretty regular basis. And we understand the very many systems that stigmatize people like that and prevent them from getting healthcare that puts them at risk. I mean, as far as stories go, there have been times when I've engaged with people who are pregnant, who are injecting drugs. And although I really wanted to give them information, if they weren't asking for it, I didn't give it. I would ask things like, are you satisfied with your health? How are things going for you? And if they would say, you know, no, I'm not so satisfied with my health, my assumption is then not, oh, it's because you're doing drugs, right? So the logical response and what I responded with was, all right, well, what's going on? What about your health is not satisfactory to you? There was a pregnant woman who had previously been on methadone when she was in jail. She really liked it. She wanted to stay on methadone, and methadone is very safe for women who are pregnant who are dependent on opioids. And she had gone back to injecting heroin because she couldn't get her ID. So she couldn't go to the methadone clinic because she didn't have an ID. She couldn't get her ID because her wallet had been stolen and she didn't have a credit card. She didn't want to wait in line at the DMV because she was 8 months pregnant and was dependent on heroin.
Classic example of the system cutting its nose off to spite its face.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Why isn't the jail giving people ID cards when they leave? And that's actually a conversation that we've been having that we're hoping to help with. Why are clinics not able to accept people who don't have IDs? Again, that's a conversation that we're trying to have. Where can the intake specialists help people get IDs? So I got on my phone and I spent $12 to order her a duplicate ID. And then I never heard from her again, which probably means she's not injecting drugs anymore. Who knows? Like, I have no idea what happened to her. But it was something so simple. And because nobody else is willing to engage with people who use drugs and not willing to engage with them in a way that is strengths-based and that is life-affirming, I don't know if she ever would have gotten that ID and would have been able to get the healthcare that she needed.
I'm going to paraphrase everything you said. How about that?
Sure.
That'll be interesting. It's about people. It's about equity, and it's about not just going past the stigma, but like not even seeing any sort of identification other than a person.
Mm-hmm.
For the folks who are hearing about this program for the first time, what advice would you give them in their daily lives when they're thinking about the opioid crisis and drug users, these categories that seem like distinctions but really shouldn't be?
You know, I think what we've learned from this opioid crisis is that, you know, we've had drug abuse crises for decades, and it's been different drugs and it's affected different populations. And now that it is very widespread, opioid use, opioid overdose is very widespread. Now that people are being individually and personally impacted because their neighbors, their employees, their family members are overdosing, that's what it took to shift the conversation. And that's really too bad that we had to have so many people die and suffer for this to be taken seriously and for people to view drug use as a public health issue. And so I would never, ever wish that on anybody. And I hope that we can all listen to each other's stories, whether it's our personal stories, our family stories, and really internalize it and view people as people who make all sorts of choices. And I think it's also important to note that we stigmatize drugs like heroin, meth, cocaine because they're illegal. We don't stigmatize people who use alcohol in the same way. We don't stigmatize people who use tobacco in the same way. Sure, there's a certain type of stigma, but I think we need to think about how laws that not everybody agreed to inform the way that we withhold human rights from people.
Thank you so much, Haley, for taking the time to talk with us at the Vitalist Spark. In a situation where too many of us can fixate on the magnitude of impersonal numbers, Sonoran Prevention Works efforts put humanity and personal connection work at the forefront of the solutions needed to address the opioid crisis. And for that, we cannot thank you enough. That's it for this mini-sode mini-series episode 4, and that's it for the series as well. You can listen to any of the episodes you missed by simply checking our episode feed. If you enjoyed our series, tell your friends to find us on their favorite podcast app, or to access any of our episodes on the web by visiting vitalisthealth.org and clicking on the Vitalist Health podcast box on the homepage. Stay tuned. We've got a full slate of episodes headed your way next. To make sure you're notified when they are released, reach into that podcast app right now and subscribe to the Vitalist Spark. As always, remember this: with great responsibility comes great power. We'll see you back on the road to well-being soon.